Good evening. Good to see you all tonight. In the name of the Lord Jesus. I do want to apologize for this, that the last 2 months not being able to say anything. It was a struggle for us as much as it was for you all that wanted to know what was going on with people that you've prayed about and people that you know. But at the same time, trying to keep everybody happy and trying to obey orders and be submissive and protect the lives of those that were taken hostage. So I just pray that there is a forgiveness there if there was any hard feelings. I know I was getting calls for 2 months all the time, text messages, and I don't know how many times I said, we can't say anything, hundreds of times. And that can be annoying, I know. And I was getting annoyed saying that. But I was talking with someone at Christian Aid yesterday, and they said that now it's over and we're free to speak. So hopefully we can learn from these experiences, and also it's a time of an informative time where we can kind of understand what happened, but also a time of hopefully God can use this story to move us a bit, because it's a good idea to think about how you felt through that time. And you know, there are a lot of feelings and a lot of thoughts go through your mind in those times, in the middle of a crisis like that. And maybe they're not always the healthiest thoughts. And then we can maybe draw from that and learn from that and remember that, you know, we're not always just in this nice situation. There are times when we may be drawn out and put through something that you did not expect, like we were that Saturday morning. So I don't want to waste a whole lot of time. I'm not sure how long this will go, but I'll just start here. It all started with an email that I got from Ohio. When I say Ohio, I mean the Ohio Home Office there in Berlin, talking about the orphanage. We have one orphanage that we support in Haiti. Because of all the corruption in Haiti, we don't support many orphanages because orphanages are businesses in Haiti. But unfortunately, there are good orphanages that are there for the right reasons that get lumped into that some. But we do have one orphanage that we've supported for many years, and it is a Holderman Mennonite orphanage. And I personally know several of the people there that are leading out, and have a lot of respect for them. And they do a good job at that orphanage. We don't micromanage it. We kind of let them run it. But every year we do have to go there and take pictures and send those pictures back to supporters, and also just make sure everything is going to the standard that we've had with that orphanage. And so I got an email saying it was that time of the year to do that. And I was also extremely busy, and we all were very busy there on the base. So we had our weekly team meeting on Thursday afternoon, and I had brought that up, just saying that we need to go to this orphanage, and everybody there was new pretty well to CAM Haiti. Sam Stoltzfus had been there for 2 years, went home for a year, and he was back. But other than that, everybody else was fairly new. Wesley Yoder, our mechanic, had been there for a year. He had been there the longest, besides myself. So I just asked if anybody wanted to take that on, to go take on the responsibility of that orphanage, and even maybe do more than what we're being asked to do. Maybe get involved more in a better way, you know, whatever. And I didn't have any volunteers, so I decided to choose, and I chose Dale Weidman. He had been in Haiti for 2 months to take on the medical program in the warehouse. And he said, yeah, that sounds great. So I turned that over to him, and I just said, yeah, whenever you want to go, you know, I'll just let you take it from here. And during that meeting, there was some interest shown that maybe some other people would want to go as well. The pastor that just come 2 weeks prior, Ray Noaker, he said, yeah, my girls, he has some older girls there, they would love to get out and go to the orphanage. And so, yeah, the planning was in the way. And then he sent a text out. We have a group chat on WhatsApp, and he sent a WhatsApp out to the group and said, hey, we plan to go this Saturday, the 16th. Whoever would like to go, just let me know, and we'll plan accordingly. And I remember looking, and everybody seemed to want to go. And in fact, everybody said they wanted to go, and including my children. And for a split second, I thought, is this a good idea? And obviously now, I wouldn't have thought of that split second again, but we had the Sunday after, the 17th, we had a communion service planned, and then the following Sunday, we were going to start the new church there in Titian and have the first service there. So in between Akai Church and going to the new church in Titian, we were going to have a communion service there on the base. And it was a week of really searching hearts, and it was a good week. We worked through some problems there on the base that we weren't aware of prior, and we wept together and prayed together. But something that was coming up that was maybe causing some of the issues was people weren't getting out as much as they had wanted to. You know, especially some of the single girls there, they don't drive, they don't have husbands to take them anywhere. And so I noticed that to be something that I would need to look into in the future, getting some avenue of them getting out more. And so when I thought of that split second, I thought of everybody going together. I thought of that. They need to get out. This is a good opportunity. And the good outweighed the risk there in my mind, and I forgot about that. And so I told my children they couldn't go, or maybe it was more my wife. We usually stick together. And people are asking, did you know the risk? And I just like to say that it's a tough question because, you know, I've been in Haiti for 6 years and we've been through a lot of things where the Lord has seen us through. And Haiti, people think that Haiti is bad now. And I'll just say, Haiti is Haiti. Haiti has been that way since I've moved there. There was kidnappings back then. There's more kidnappings now, yes. But prior to this, since I've been there, no white Americans had been kidnapped. It wasn't a concern of mine. Now, I had been threatened myself personally to be kidnapped. I was told that I was going to be kidnapped, but I've been threatened with everything else as well. And I did not at all fear this to happen. 2 weeks prior to that, we had a box truck going down south, and it broke down. The leaf springs broke, and the thing was loaded down. So me and Ryan Corver and Abram went down there and spent the night down there and fixed it and drove up through that same way. And there was a truck parked sideways in the road, and I stopped there, and there was a policeman ways back, and he said, you know, the road's blocked, you can't pass. And We just used caution and we navigated through that and we passed. There was some gang activity there, but we didn't have many options. And as a group there at CAM with the team that we have, and I can't speak enough about the team that we had. I could see God working up to that point, preparing exactly the right people for what was to come. We talked about this. One of the staff said, Barry, I'm ready to die for this. And that's what I wanted. If we're willing to come to Haiti, if we're willing to do this, let's be willing to die for it. And we can put it all on the line. And we need more missionaries like that. Missionaries that aren't going for a couple-year term just to experience some things. We need missionaries that are willing to put their life into it and let God lead them to wherever they need to go. And Cam works in a lot of countries that are very dangerous, and so it's not a new thing, I don't think. So I think we were prepared for whatever came. We had a group. We talked about ransom as a group, the same group, and how ransom is off the table. You know, things we talk about. You know, and so the day came. They loaded up in the bus there. We have a 17 passenger bus. It's just a little van kind of with crammed in 17 people. And they had a word of prayer, and they got in, they left that morning. And again, I didn't think anything of it. Ray Noaker stayed home. His family left. They had been there for 2 weeks. They were about to begin their third week, and we had a pastor training course going at that time. And the communion day tomorrow, and so Ray was staying at home and preparing for that day, the following day. And it was just a normal Saturday. And Ray had asked to speak with me, so me and him went out on the porch of the warehouse there, and we were just sitting there talking about what's going on here in CAM at Haiti. He had heard things. It seems like the whole world has heard things about what's went on there the last year and a half, 2 years. And people often know more than I think they know when they come down. And so I was explaining to him the spiritual warfare that we encountered as soon as we stepped onto that place. And I don't blame anybody specifically for anything that happened, but in Haiti there are a lot of people that are very good at taking advantage of other people. There are a lot of missionaries that go down there and they're not concerned about what they do, and they open themselves up for someone to take advantage of them. And I'm not saying that's anybody's fault. It's just what happens. And so Cam had been there for 30 years, and it was quite amazing what I found when I went there. There was a lot of corruption going on. The base itself was being controlled by a gang, more than one gang. And I instantly inherited something that was going to take a lot of work. And again, I do not say that people prior to me did not do a great job at all. And I'm not saying that I did do a good job. I don't want anyone to think any of that there. I was explaining this to him on Saturday morning. We had went through the communion service, and we had talked about who was going to do what and all of that, and then we were talking about our vision, and I was hoping that Ray would stay long term, but he was only there for a 2 month period, and I was trying to convince him that we needed him long term. And so I was trying to get him engaged in what was going on and see the spiritual warfare and how gangs are here doing this. The gangs, they wanted $750,000 from CAM or they weren't going to allow us to function. That was the first day that I was there. They were catching our vehicles out and destroying them and breaking mirrors off and painting things and just harassing our people. And so when I went there, they showed up, the gang there, just to give you a little bit of backdrop. And they were very, very mean and aggravated and demanding that we pay this money or else we're not going to be able to function. They're going to torment us and we may as well just leave. And I just told them, we're not going to give you anything. Okay? In fact, this is the last time I'm going to have you come in here with this gang attitude. That we're a Christian mission. We're here to help the Haitian people find the Lord Jesus. We're not here to try to negotiate with gangsters. And they were very mad. And there was people that said I was too hard there that day. But I was trying to make a point that I'm not going to give in to you no matter what the cost is. You can torment us all our days. There had been money paid to this gang prior, and it just prolonged the situation. I did tell them, if you come back and you're respectable, then we can sit and talk. I'd love to hear your stories. I'd love to work with you, but I can't work with you with guns in your hands and attitudes. And it wasn't long before they came back, and through working over this, they put down their guns. And they wanted to change, and then we started working with these gangs. And it was just a blessing. And I was basically telling Ray that day that we have been through a lot. And I can't explain all that we've been through. The disappointments, the attacks, not from just the Haitians. Because when a Haitian is making a lot of money under the table from someone that's not aware of it, and then someone cuts that off, he becomes very angry. And I was dealing with that on many fronts. But also people in America, Anabaptist people, that came at us very hard. We were getting attacked from all angles, but we were certain that we were going in the right direction, that God was leading us, and this was clearly the way it needed to go. And I was telling Ray that morning that I feel like we have finally broken through. The fruit of our labor is starting to show, and things are starting to go well here. Now, I don't take any credit for that, but it just seemed like persevering through some of that and just saying this is the way it's going to go, it was starting to show. The pastor training was going well, and we changed a lot of things to that. It wasn't as big, but it was more dynamic and more small and more focused. We had to let go half of our employees, people that other people loved dearly, because the path that they were led down led them to somewhere they were no longer trustworthy. So we had new employees, and that was working out really well. Our new employees seemed to be very godly people, and just. Everything just seemed to be going great, and I was telling Ray that Saturday morning on the 16th that you come just at a great time, and now let's just hit the ground running and let's go. I was teaching the pastor training. We needed someone full time there. We were struggling to find people, and while I'm talking, my phone is really carrying on, and it's not uncommon, but I remember being frustrated at my phone, and just. I'd have one of the gangsters call me, 50 times in an hour. And that was going on, just ring after ring after ring. And finally, I looked at my phone, and it was a missionary from down south in Haiti, and he said, "Are your people okay?" And that was the only thing that I read. And I immediately thought of the bus that left. And I scrolled up, and another message said, "Do you have 15 people out?" I looked at Ray and I said, "We have an emergency." Then I kept scrolling through my messages, and one was from Wes saying, "Please pray, the gang has taken us." Another message said, "We're being kidnapped." And just in the matter of seconds, it was like my whole life changed. And Ray just put his arm around me and started praying. And I can't really explain the feelings there, but I called Phil Mass, my supervisor, and he was in the same situation. I told him what just happened. Then I called Steve and Sally, and I didn't really know what to do. But instantly, my phone began to blow up from every angle. Now, if I can switch just real quick to the bus, they went to the orphanage and they had a good time. They spent several hours there. There was some remnants of some roadblocks and things on the way there, and they were coming back and they seen a vehicle parked across the road, and we have talked about this. If something like that happens, you look to see if other vehicles are passing. You look to see what other people are doing. If you're the only one in the area, you need to get out. And there was nobody else around, so Dale turned the bus around and started to flee. And normally that would work. That's what everybody does. But for some reason this day, the pickup truck with the gangsters in it caught up to them, passed them, cut them off, and controlled the bus at that point. They had them follow them down this road to their territory, and I know that there's a large territory there that this gang controls, and they're trying to come into Port-au-Prince and take over the city, and that's what I seen that one day. They were actually in the city having a gunfight, but they drove them back in here, and the police don't go back there. Nobody goes back there. It's very much secured by this gang. They have security. They own the area. A police went through there after the kidnapping, and they kidnapped the police and videotaped it and put it on YouTube. And he's just, Lamo Sunju is asking this policeman, why are you here? You should know better than that. And that's kind of how it is. You know, if someone goes in there, they're in their territory. And they drove him into that area. And when they finally, after a rough drive, and they pulled the driver Dale out and smacked him up some, and the Haitian got in there, they finished the drive and they got out. And all these gangsters were standing around with their assault rifles, and they're just looking them over like they come from the cattle auction, and you know, heads in the windows. And finally, they usher the women out, and the men start claiming the women. This one's mine. This one's mine. And some of them started to undress. At that point, the men all came out, and in unison they started singing, "The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him." And these men pulled out their phones and began to videotape them singing that song. And they testify that that was the last time the women were ever threatened. And that's what we were praying for, brothers and sisters, right there. That God would work in that kind of way. And so then they put them, there was a little house there they put them in. And that's where, talking to Matt Miller, that was the first one released, he had said there was two Haitians in there tied hand and foot. And before they put them in, they took them two Haitians out. And then sometime later, they heard two gunshots. And they were under the impression that they just executed those two men, and that may have been the case. But they go into this room, and there's blood splattered on the wall, and there's bullet holes in the walls. And yeah, they were, you can just imagine what they were going through. Back on our side, you know, I'm a bit in shock. I don't really know what to do. The U.S. Embassy, the head of the U.S. Embassy calls me. His name was Scott. And just basically says, hey, you know, he's trying to verify things, and he does believe that this is a kidnapping, but we need to wait for a call to verify that. The FBI is on standby, but I was getting calls from all manner of people. Private lawyers were calling me. Everybody seemed to know how to handle this thing, and everybody seemed to want to tell me how to do it, and I appreciate that. I really do, but it was very overwhelming for me. Not knowing what to do, I didn't know what to do. The anti-kidnapping unit in Haiti was very much in contact with me, wanting to take on this case. But yeah, it was about 4 hours of just chaos. Meeting with the board, you know, everybody, the CAM board, everybody was kind of in the same boat. You know, what do we do? Did this really happen? Is it really for real? Are we going to have communion tomorrow? Surely they're not going to keep them overnight. And then I got a call, and on the phone it said it was from Ryan Corver's phone, which is one that was one of the fathers that was taken. And so I quickly answered it and was going outside, and the service was bad, but it was Sam Stoltz was on the line, and he was just saying, hey, and I thought they were free. And I remember thinking, my, we've caused quite a stir if they're free already. But he just said, yeah, we've been kidnapped. And I asked him if everybody's together. He said, we're all together. And then Lamo Sunju, the leader of the gang, grabbed the phone. And I didn't know who I was dealing with, but he just said, you know, everybody's in my hand. I'm in control. I have them all. They're all in my hand. And he said, this is not going to be a long process. This is only going to take one day. I need $1 million for each, or I kill them all. And I quickly just said, we're missionaries. We're here working for God. We're not going to give you money. I said, you got the wrong people. These people are children of God. And he screamed, money or they die, and hung up the phone. And my phone was ringing so many times during that call that it distracted me. But I then talked to Scott Reese. He called right after that, and just that's all they wanted to know. Okay, this is now a ransom situation. And so just like that, I mean, it was amazing how quickly that spread, and the FBI was involved in calling me.
And so
the FBI called me from the Miami field office, and he basically just said, the first thing you needed to do, Barry, is find out how much money you have. And once you know how much you have, now you know what your bargaining power is, and then we start negotiating. And I said, we're not going to pay money. And he said, then you're going to bury all of your people. And I said, I thought that America had a no ransom policy. He said, they do, but that's just a title. He said, these things are resolved with ransom. And he had me so confused that I did a background check on him and called the Miami or called another office that transferred me, and I didn't think this guy was really with the FBI. And David Troyer also questioned that, and it just didn't sound like it. We expected someone to come on and want to. So anyhow, they got on a plane. Six of those FBI men got on a plane, or people got on a plane, and flew down to Haiti. And then all day Sunday, I met with the anti-kidnapping unit there in Haiti, and a lot of people said I need to work with them. They know they're Haitian. They know what's going on. But the FBI seemed a little more credible. I didn't know what to do. So they agreed to work together so that way I could work with both of them, or at least talk to both of them, see what they wanted. So the FBI scheduled a meeting with me on Monday morning, and Phil Mass and his wife and daughter flew down Monday morning. And I picked Phil up at the airport, and we went to the U.S. Embassy and met with the FBI. And I don't know anything about the FBI, but I could tell these people were professional people. They're very good at what they do, and they're all business. At the same time, they know how to talk. They know how to. And so we sat down there, and I'd already talked to the one in length and knew where he stood. And so I remember just telling these FBI agents, and they had said, you know, we are people of faith as well. And I just said, I don't want to be offensive, but if I tell you where we are going to stand on this, you're not going to understand. So I just want you to know that we believe in the Bible. We believe in God, the power of God. And I'm not saying you don't, but we believe it in a way that we live it out every day. We're not going to carry a gun on our hips. I said, I'm not trying to offend anyone. But we actually do believe that God is still working today. And one of them started tearing up at that point. And they could see it, that this was real. They never dealt with something. Several times through this, they've said, we've never dealt with people like you. And like at one point, they said, well, they'd always say, we have something for that. Oh, we can take care of that. It was almost like all the resources of the U.S. government were at our fingertips. And they would do anything at any moment. We can have that flown down. We can do this. And, you know, one of them said that in that meeting, we have a counselor that we want to have down here ready to meet these people when they're released. And Phil Mass said, we really appreciate that offer, but we have solid church groups, and we support each other, and we don't feel like we need your counselor. Not saying anything bad about your counselors or anything, but we don't need them. We have our own people. And that was the direction that was going. And the FBI was bewildered. And they dropped the ransom thing. And they brought two professional negotiators on, FBI agents, that were there just to support me. They respected our stance. I was impressed by them. They could see that what we were trying to do was what was right. So After that meeting, you know, I'm watching the clock. We have 24 hours. He's going to call back at some point and say, meet me here with the money. He never called. I never talked to him. He never called for 8 days. So for 8 days, meetings and phone calls, but nothing. Nobody could do anything. Everybody was in the same boat. He had full control, and he knew that. So they were, the FBI was a bit confused, and finally they said, we have his number, we want you to call him. I remember thinking this is what a lot of people said not to do, but I also was running low on esteem or patience. And so we decided that I would call him. And so I called him on day eight. And you know, they said it's going to be a quick call. You're not going to have time. The FBI is going to be on it. They know that we're going to be tracing the call, this, that, and the other. Well, we talked for 12 minutes that first call. And we started to build a relationship. And that was my desire. Lamo Sunju. Now he's all over the news. He's this tattooed drug addict gangster that even claimed in one video that he eats people. But dealing with gangsters, I've realized that these people have never had a chance. I mean, you think about where you come from, where I come from. We've had opportunities in our lives. But these people have never had an opportunity. I mean, I'm telling you, I've talked to people that have never had anyone love them before. And what do? They react in a negative way, just like our children would react if we stopped loving them. And so my heart is not at all to clean these guys off the streets. My heart is that these people can see love. Maybe for the first time, 35 years old, first time they see anybody that loves them. And that power can change people. And that love doesn't come from me and you. It comes from God. We don't know love without God. So that was what I was going to do. We don't have anything else to do. We don't have money to offer him. We can only offer him ourselves, relationship. I told him, I want to come to you. I want to sit with you. And I could tell that there was some respect starting to build. I would say, Jesus wants to give you eternal life. And he would say, is that true? But so many people only see a gangster that should be in prison. I'm not saying he shouldn't be in prison. I'm not saying that God... I'm not trying to say what should happen. But I do know one thing. God puts him right in front of us. What are we going to do with that? There were several people involved that were not like-minded as us. From the world, I would say. And they didn't understand this. They were saying, you know, Barry needs to leave off the preaching. You know, we got people's lives in the balance here. But we were saying, this is all that we need to do. Just imagine if we could get this man to soften his heart and God could change him. Would that not change everything? And it was a very nerve-wracking time. There was so much on the line with these calls. Never been more stressed out in my life. Everybody is focused on these calls. It's all that, and most people are saying I should do it this way or that way. But the FBI said, Barry, you're doing a very good job. And it was these two FBI negotiators. But we had to admit the negotiations aren't getting anywhere. We're not negotiating. We're not doing any of that. But in our talks, you know, we had 17 calls there. And everyone was kind of the same. Listen, you need Jesus. We love you. One time he paused and he said, I love you too. And that's what kept us up at night. That's what kept us on our knees. I can honestly say that our group there, Phil Mass, Ray Noaker, Simeon Shankster was there most of the time, and myself, and then John and Brandon were there for some time. We had some sweet times, devotional times, prayer times, seeking God. It seemed like every time we opened our Bibles, God was talking about deliverance. It was a powerful time. But at the same time, this next call was coming, and it was a very stressful time. But at one time in the calls, he said, come and get them. And he hung up. And that does something to you. And so instantly, I call him back, and I said, where should I come? And he said, you know where I am. And I said, no, I do not know where you are. Tell me where to come. He said, come, and he hangs up again. I call back, and he says, don't forget the money. And I said, you know, we're not going to give you money. I've said that before. And he said, just give us a little money. We have wives and children. And this is exactly what we've heard before talking with other gangsters. We had another gang, if I can jump in here. We had another gang that was, after that first gang settled down, we had them working on a road. We had them occupied. We were preaching to them every other Friday, sometimes every Friday. They were hearing the gospel. They were changing. Good things were happening. Another gang came in and tried to take over. And the leader of that gang came and he said, we're shutting you down unless you pay me $150,000. And I said, listen, I'm not going to pay you anything. You can shut us down. He said, I'll kill everybody on this base and I'll burn everything to the ground tomorrow morning if I don't have my money. And he's got guns. His guy's got guns. They had shot at us a couple days before that. And I just looked at him. I said, listen, that's fine. You can do all those things. We will not give you anything. So he put a chain and locked our gate that day. And he said, you have till tomorrow morning. And I'll be honest with you, we didn't really fear a whole lot. We knew that this is not God's will that we would give this man some money to protect ourselves. What God's will is, we didn't claim to know. But maybe it would be that we'd all be killed. Maybe this guy would come in here and just burn everything. But we can only do what we can do. We can't go against our conscience, because then we put God out of the picture. Now we're sitting ducks. And so he called me back later that night. And I ignored some of his calls. He called me back and I answered and he said, okay, $100,000. Give me $100,000. I said, I'm not going to give you anything. Then he went down to food boxes. He said, we need food. Give us food boxes. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to. We don't work this way. You can't come in here and demand something. What's that going to do for the next guy? Now, if you guys need food, we can sit down and we can talk about it. Go look. Go to your village. And he said, give me one food box and I'll. And I'll have to say, we slept that night. I did hear later that some of the staff kept their clothes on, but it's what happened there in Haiti. I don't think anybody in this room would have said we should have given them. Maybe I'm wrong. The next morning, before the sun came up, the chain was off the gate. He called me. Acted totally normal. Said, hey. You said you'd come to our village and look around. I said, yeah. I said, what about coming? Said, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I said, I'll never do that. I said, okay, later this afternoon, later today I'll come. We'll sit and talk. So I took two people, Ryan and Wes, with me. We went back here, and there his little shack was. And him and his cousin were sitting outside, and we pull up there and sit down. And I kind of give him a little hard time, you know, for all of that. And just said, you know, this life is not worth living. This life of killing. And I preached to this man that day. I said, you're going to die and go to hell unless you change. That's all that matters. I can give you $150,000. I can give you the food boxes, whatever you want. I can build you a school and take care of this whole area. But unless you get right with God, you're going to spend forever in hell. And he sobered up. He was looking at the ground. He said, I know. I said, you give me permission to come here and hold a Bible study Friday, right here. Yeah, that'd be great. He said, but there'd be a lot of people that would come. I said, well, do you have a better place? Because we were just under this little thorn tree. Do you have a better place that we can meet? He said, yeah, I'll find a place. I said, okay, Friday. So I went back to the base. And I was in my, Phil called, and I was in the office kind of telling him about, I don't know if I was talking about that or not. Maybe I was saying that, you know, we have another place where we're going to go preach to these gangs. And that's exciting to me. I've heard other people say it's foolish, casting pearls before swine. I've been rebuked for doing it. All manner of things. But I cannot agree with those claims. But I was sitting there in my office talking, and one of the Haitians walked in, and he was shocked, and he was trying to talk, and he couldn't talk, and he left. I kind of told him to wait. I was on the phone, and then Ryan came in, and he was pale white. And finally, I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Both of those two men were just shot." I said, "No way." Jumped in the truck, drove back up there, and there they lay, heads blown off. But the reason I'm saying that is you can kind of see the heart of that man. He goes from, "I'm killing everybody," to the next day, "Yes, you can come and have Bible studies." These people, they just want help. They don't want a food box, really. They want someone to help them and to love them. And I felt like when he said, "Just a little money, we got wife and children," it flashed in my mind. We're going down the right path here. We're on to something. Now forget about what's going on outside of this situation. Forget about the news and the FBI. Me and this man that holds the keys, he said several times, "They're in my hand. If we can get something going here." But it was ironic because so many people were saying, "You need to pay." I was getting that from every angle. And I kept saying, "No, we have a policy. We don't pay." I had told him, I went through, I recorded all of our conversations. I went through there and counted. I had told him 17 times, "We will not pay." And everybody seemed to be on board with that. It was going well. And then one Saturday, it was decided we'll offer them food boxes. And I did not see that as a good idea. But we submitted to that. And I was talking to him that Saturday. And again, I said, "Don't forget who you have. You have people that serve Jesus." And he said, "Don't forget, I serve King Lucifer." And I remember that Sunday morning, me and Phil were rejoicing because it's verified what we were up against. We're not up against just somebody out having a good time. We're up against the kingdom of darkness. And if you listen to the testimonies from those people with inside, voodoo like I've never seen. Good and evil. So that afternoon was when I needed to make the deal to offer the food boxes. Someone asked me, "Well, how many food boxes would you need to equal the money he wants?" 66 container loads. It was more than that. Can't remember the numbers, but it would have taken about 60 years just to get them all in. So we decided to offer them 300 food boxes. And he did not like that. I did not ask for food. 300 food boxes. No, I'm off of that, back on to the kidnapping, sorry. The men that were shot was just a little story I interjected just to get so you can see the heart of these people. Instead of just looking at the YouTube and the news and just what the natural mind would perceive, these ruthless killers, which I'm not denying that, but just to see the heart behind some of that. We've seen that there on the ground, whereas you have not seen that. People in Ohio have not seen that. So he got very mad, that call, and he cussed me out and hung up. And at that point, we kind of stepped across the line. And things changed. Now, I want to say that we all have different viewpoints. We all come from different places. Our journeys have been different. Some people's faith is greater than others. And I'll leave that at that, I guess. But it got to the point where now what do we offer? And that's what I was trying to avoid. I was pretty certain that if we kept going the way we were going, listen, I have nothing for you. God would have worked. But yeah, the debates that went on about can God work amidst our decisions and all of this were long and many. Hours and hours of discussion on all of these topics. But it came out that we are willing to pay. And yeah, we weren't all together on that, I'll just say that. So I felt, me and Phil were kind of down there working this thing, and we kind of felt like it would be a little hypocritical for now all of a sudden to put money on the table after all of this. And so we decided that, okay, if that's the route that we're going to go, you know, we're not going to hinder that, but we don't feel comfortable being a part of that as far as negotiating. And the FBI was saying, no, we want you to still negotiate. And they were also saying, 1 week, this thing will be over. We get money on the table. That's all they want. It's a business transaction. The thing will be over in a week. So I stepped off of the calls. And they continued. And it was chosen by Christian Aid to choose someone else to kind of handle everything, including the ransom. And so we were kind of in the dark then. But it was difficult to be pulled off and then be in the dark. It was something that we were working through. And it led to some discouragement. It seemed like everything just stopped and nothing was moving forward. The weeks passed, nothing was going on. And on October 28th, I get a text message from Ryan Korver. And the message just said, "We're okay, Barry, how much longer?" And that was that message, I thought of that message for so much time. What does that mean? Am I supposed to be doing something? Is there something I can do? He had gotten his phone. They had given the phones back and said, "We want you to put your passcodes in here and delete all your set. Get your phones back to factory settings." So Ryan quickly acted like he was struggling with that, and he was texting me, and he dropped a pin even and sent me the pin, and I said, I asked him some questions. "You still all together?" "Yes, we're all together." I said, "Are you encouraged?" He said, "Yes," with an exclamation point. "Keep praying." And I left that conversation very encouraged, feeling like they were with us. This is a matter of prayer. He didn't say anything about the feds or anything. And so there were several things like that happened through this time that kind of gave us some courage. But then the weeks and the days would pass by, and the phone's staying right by you, and make sure it's always connected, it's always got service, it can never go dead. Someone would call me and say, "Hey, I tried to call you twice and you didn't answer. Is everything okay?" I mean, there was a lot of pressure with the phone and bad service. The diesel was running out, the cell phone towers were going down. It was extremely stressful because everybody thought they're going to call you when they get out. So the weeks passed. On November 11th, I get a call from the FBI saying tonight is going to be the night. And we had just fallen asleep, if I remember right. And yes, tonight is going to be the night. He said, "We're sending our guy out to do the drop, and they're going to be released. Be ready for the call." And so instantly, you know, everything that you, things you can't even control, just your body is. And so I got Phil, and we were ready to go. And then about 40 minutes later, never mind. It was called off. And then the disappointment that follows that is enough to. It was a bad deal. And that was November 11th. On November 20th, I get a call around 9:40 from the U.S. Embassy from Scott, and he says, "We have Matt and Rachel here. They've been released due to health. Come as quick as you can." So again, me and Phil run up to the embassy in the middle of the night, and he told me on the phone, Matt is not doing well, he can hardly walk, some other things. I get there, and Matt seems to be just like he used to be, and Rachel. And it seems to be that God healed him from the time he was released to the time I got there. But the FBI, they expressed that they want everybody out of Haiti. They wanted us to leave Haiti. The embassy put out a thing saying all Americans and Canadians should leave Haiti. And there was a lot of pressure from everywhere to leave Haiti, from Ohio, family. And I feel like the picture that was painted wasn't really accurate. It was like, you know, you step out of your door, you know, it's over for you. So when they were there, and he told me on the phone, we want them to be flown to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to a hospital there, but they don't want to go. They want to come back to the base there. And I'm rejoicing. That's exactly what I want. I want this thing to come back home and relax. Let's get our bearings. The news is everywhere. There's helicopters. There's drones flying everywhere. Let's come back here, home to where you are, your stuff is. But the FBI was just as... But at the same time, I didn't want them to come back if there was health issues and they needed to be. So I eventually just left it up to them. You know, you call the shot. And so they decided to fly out. They had a helicopter flown in from the Bahamas and flew out that same night. And then there was people saying, okay, the ball's rolling now. But I was thinking, you know, they were sick. They didn't want them to die. That's why they were released. We are still right where we were. Now, maybe that was just my negative thinking at that time. But after that, again, nothing. The gang's not talking. There's no communication. The families are getting concerned. I'm starting to receive phone calls from the families. Hey, what can we do? And the pressure was building. And then on December 4th at 7:13, I get another call. The drop is on the way. Get ready. It's going to be tonight. We've reached an agreement. They'll all be released. And again, rejoicing. I mean, just I can't express the feeling that we had. I remember my wife saying, "Don't get too excited," but you can't help it. Something that takes over. And then an hour later, never mind. He called it off. He said he got tired of waiting. Tomorrow. And again, disappointment. There was somebody else involved with that were keeping him kind of off the record for his protection, that was kind of involved with some of that was involved with going in. They kind of had access in to the gang. They kind of had respect from both parties. So they were kind of a neutral figure, and they want to keep it that way. But the gang was calling this person saying, hey, we have two people that are sick, this and that. And so the next night, you have nothing to do but think. So I remember thinking, okay, it was 9:48 the first time. Okay, now last night they called it 7:13. And I remember looking at my phone at 7:11 and thinking the next night, okay, maybe it's going to be right now. Let's brace. And at 7:13, I get another call. Cheryl, which is Ray's wife, and two others have been released. get up here as soon as you can. So we went up there, took Ray with us, and I didn't know who the other two were. I just knew it was Cheryl and the other two, and I was thinking Cheryl and the two small children, possibly. Walked into the embassy, went through all that security and all that, and walk into this room, and there's Kay Yoder sitting there with a big smile on her face. And the first thing I thought of is she looks perfect. She looks just how she did. She looked happy. She looked. It was a work of God, a blessing, just to see her there. And then it was Cheryl's 6-year-old son. So they were going to release. So basically, they agreed to release everybody. The drop was made, but they reneged, and they were only going to release two. One of them being Cheryl. And Cheryl and Kay seemed to be in the worst health as far as sores and blistering things. But the 6-year-old, Sheldon, would not allow his mother to leave without him. And a huge fit was thrown and between, you know, separating the mother and the child. And, you know, I can just imagine the feelings there. And so they eventually called some people and they let Sheldon go with. And so again, everybody's rejoicing, but still I'm thinking about 12 that are inside. And now I'm wondering, what is the next step? And it was hard for me to rejoice. And so basically, there's a lot of things on the media, you know, okay, if the ransom was paid, then how was there an escape? That doesn't make sense. You know, and maybe this isn't true and all this. But when I was talking to him on the phone, I'll just throw this in, he said one of the first calls, he said, this has nothing to do with Cam, has nothing to do with you. This is between me and the government. They give us these guns, they pay us to do their work, and then they come in here and arrest us and shoot us. And he was referring to that video of him when he said he was going to kill the missionaries. He was standing in front of 6 caskets, and he said, those were my men that they just came in and shot. They didn't do anything wrong. He said, they're going to have to pay. And he wanted the prime minister and somebody else. And then he wanted one of the head guy of the gang had already been arrested and sentenced to life in prison. He wanted him released. And I was trying to tell him, listen, that's out of my hands. I mean, if you want someone released in the government, you need to kidnap somebody from the government. I mean, you can't kidnap poor missionaries and expect them to be able to control people in the government. And I think he kind of understood that because he basically dropped that with me then from then on. But now after that was done and that deal was made, he said, I can't release any more until he's released from prison. And that terrified me because the leader has a lot of pull still on the outside, which the FBI was working on that. And if Lam Mo Sun Ju released them, he would have him killed. And he basically was saying that. It's out of my control. But it doesn't look like anybody will be released until he's released. And then the FBI said, he's not going to be released. The Haitian government will not do it. So, we're at a standstill once again. And this time there's no communication at all. The FBI came out to the base several times. They came out after that. And yeah, they just said, their heads were down, kind of. Their methods didn't work. And so we're praying. We were praying through this whole time, as everybody else was, but there were some immense times of struggle where I questioned things. You know, why is this happening like this? Why is it going this way? I'll just be honest. As soon as the talk of money came, my peace left. And I tried to figure that out. Why does my peace have to leave? And so, it was a struggle like I've never struggled before. But all of these methods weren't working. All this work. The FBI had a plane in the air the entire time. They were surveilling the whole situation. There was nothing anybody could do. And so now the time is passing, and I know that, you know, the FBI has told me they won't answer the phone. They completely cut us off. They're waiting for us to deliver him, and we can't do that. So all of a sudden I started to think, you know, now is a time that God can work. And I still don't know where I stand on this. But does God work when we're doing everything that we can? When we do everything that we can and it's in our power, does God still work? And I discussed that with so many people, and I don't know. But I don't feel comfortable there. I don't feel comfortable saying, God, I'm going to do everything I can. But I understand people are from different... I understand all that. I'm the oddball, possibly. But now it was almost like our resources are expired. We have nowhere else to turn. The next step is a tactical assault, which they said, if it goes very well, two of your people will be killed. If it goes well. We didn't want that. I mean, can you imagine? I know the carnal mind wants that. Everybody was saying it. Christians were saying, what's America doing? Why isn't the military in here? I just pictured Lamo Sunju laying there, bullet ridden. And I just couldn't find peace with that. Now, I'm not saying the government doesn't have their job. I'm not saying that. The government has their job. They're appointed by God to punish the evildoer. I'm not trying to say that they don't. But I just couldn't support it in this. So we were kind of all just down there at the base. We talked about doing things. I talked about going in. Someone said, why don't we get 50 Amish men to walk in there with their hands up? What would they do? And we started thinking about things like that. When you get to the bottom, then... the pressure came on for us to leave again. People started saying, you know, in a couple weeks we'll do this. And I'm thinking, serious? This is just going to become a way of life? Pretty soon Phil's is saying, we're going to have to go back. And Phil was right there with me. We had some tough days. We had a lot of time on our knees together. I got to go back. I got things that need to be done. He had two children that were back here the whole time. Yeah, I understand. You have to go back. That's fine. So he scheduled a flight for his wife and his daughter first, and he said, I'll give it a few more days before I leave. So on the 16th at 10 o'clock, they were flying out. And we gathered the night before, we gathered most nights, and just prayed, God, do something before their plane leaves. We've been through this whole thing together. We want to be together when it's over. And so, like so many nights, we'd wake up in the morning and be the same. And it's like a bad hangover. Just the same. But I tried to seek the Lord and get encouraged and try to be an encouragement to my family. My family was, it was a toll on my family. The children would cry a lot, my wife. It was just a very immense struggle. And I would just cry, Lord, whoever, if we're wrong, whatever, let's be finished. Let's just be finished with this. And then you can show us what we did wrong. I woke up that morning on the 16th and I was at the bottom of the barrel. I always kiss my family goodbye. I just walked out and said, I'm going to work. My phone rang. I was annoyed. Here come the phone calls again. And everybody asking, what's going on? What's the news? Nothing again. And I remember thinking, I'm not answering. Finally answer the call, and I can't hear. The service is too bad. And I'm just about ready to say something probably that isn't nice. And I thought I heard an American. And I still was thinking it was somebody else that called me all the time. And then I thought I very clearly heard, "This is Wes." And I can't explain what you feel. He said, "This is Wes. God delivered us." That's all he said. And I'm the director. I got to try to handle this thing in a professional way. You know, are you all delivered? Yes, every one of us. Where are you at? We're in the mountains. He said, "I'm coming right now." "What mountain are you in?" "We're in Goat Mountain." And I couldn't function, I'll be honest. I was going to call Phil, and I couldn't. I just got in the truck and drove right up to his house. And he was inside saying bye to his wife, and they were packed up. And I just said, "They've escaped. We need to go pick them up." And so if I can switch real quick to them, they battled this thing like you need to hear Sam's testimony or one of their testimonies, but it's amazing all that they went through and praying all the time, singing. And I told people, we're prepared for this. And I believed it in my heart. We're missionaries. We signed up for this. They're going to be okay. And we're praying. The whole world was praying. And I didn't. The world was praying that they stayed strong. And they did. I'm just humbled at how God worked there inside there through all the voodoo and the evil and the wickedness and the living conditions. But there was some of them that wanted to escape early on, and some of them didn't want to escape. From my understanding, some thought it wouldn't have been a biblical thing to do to escape. The guard said, "If you escape, we're going to be shot, no question. And if we catch you before you escape, we're going to shoot you." And so the stakes were high, but I knew the men there, and I knew that there was going to be some that would be hard to not try to escape, very adventurous. But one thing they said, "We will all stick together through anything." And that's what we were pushing so hard there at the base. No matter what we do it together. And no matter what we believe and what we stand for, we do it together. The unity here has to be shown to the employees, to the gangs. They have to see that. And that was practiced very well in there from all the testimony that I heard. And so after the releases, you know, they were getting the same news we were. The guards would say, "Okay, tonight's the night. You'll get ready," and nothing would happen. And so a lot of disappointments, ups and downs, the same inside. But finally, after Kay and Cheryl and Sheldon were released, they also felt just something just happened, that nothing's going on. The leader, Sanju's not coming anymore. The guards are disappointed. It just, nobody talked anymore. It was just, and they could feel that this thing took a turn. And so now they started looking at this escaping thing a little closer. And there was still one of the single men that was not for it. But they had a lot of respect for him, and I just marvel at that. But he finally said, "Okay, I'll be okay with escaping, but we have to walk straight out the front door. And if God wants to blind their eyes, He can blind their eyes." And the other ones weren't too sure about that. So Ryan Corver was the father of the two small children. He said he was praying fervently that God would show him what to do. And we were praying that he would lead out and you know, or whoever would lead out, but somebody would lead out and be a spiritual and a physical leader in there. And he was seeking the Lord, and he said the Lord brought to his mind a very vivid account from when his grandparents were young. There was a female in a nursing home that was paralyzed or something. She was not able to function, and she was raped and impregnated in that nursing home by one of the staff. And everybody, it was, if I remember right, it was a Christian nursing home, but everybody was okay with aborting this child because of the circumstances. But Ryan Corver's grandparents said, no, we will pay for everything and we will take the child. And they did that. And now the child is married in the church and seems to be a blessing. And Ryan Corver, he was weeping and he said, God said, your grandparents had their time. I called them to do something and they did it. Ryan, this is your time. Get your family and leave. And he said it was so clear. And so he walked back in and he got the rest of them around and he shared that with them. And he said for the first time they were all in agreement. Okay, we hear that and we're willing to try it. So Wes, the mechanic, he had been looking at the mountains, seeing how far they were, and he thought maybe if they could get to that tree. And he had, you know, for weeks he's scoping out every little bush, and he's confident they can get out. So Ryan said, okay, Wes, you attempt an escape during the day and see how you feel after you get through some of these bushes and wiggle around a little bit. See what you see. And so he agreed to that. And this is from my understanding of how I heard the story told. And Ryan said, and I knew Wes was going to come back and say, yeah, it's good to go, no matter what he saw, because he wants to go. So, Lord, let me see on his countenance if he's confident. And so Wes went, and he went. They had to just go to the bathroom out in this field, but they built some little four-sided thing with plants and things, and he went in there and then kind of wiggled out underneath that and somehow. And then he came back, and Ryan said, as soon as I seen his face, I knew that we were good. So he came back, and he said, yes, I think if we go here and do that and wait for this time. And so they already had somewhat the plan together, and now they came together, and they talked about it, and they did a lot of planning and planned who would go first and how they would do it. And there was a door that was always barricaded that they were going to try to get open, and they were trying to stage that thing, and lots of details there. But one thing, there was a generator that they would try to run at night for the first couple hours, and they would try to run fans. And they really tried to do that for the two babies' sake. They really liked the babies, and they were really nice to the babies. They brought baby food, and they would you know, befriend the babies. And Ryan kind of was a little, you know, they're gangsters and voodoo people. But it ended up helping, but for the last couple days, this generator wasn't working. It had run out of oil. So that was the only part of the puzzle that they couldn't understand. You know, without this generator running, it is deathly quiet. And we need to break through this door to get out. I mean, it seems impossible, but they were so confident that God had called them to do it that night that they were going to go ahead with it. But there was a 6x6 post leaning up against this door. From my understanding, I'm a little hazy on these details, but this post was going to fall a certain way and land on something that was going to make a lot of noise. So they had to turn this post somehow so that way in the middle of the night when it fell, they could catch the post and let it down. It wouldn't make any noise. And so they had some assignments they needed to try to do. They needed to move this and do that during the day. And hopefully no one would notice it. And one of them was move this big rock that was right outside the door that held the door shut. And then the post was against it. You couldn't get to that rock from the inside, if I understand right. So they had to move this rock. No, what it was is there was a little hole in the boards, the side of the house, and they had to stick a stick in there, if I remember right, and somehow maneuver this rock. So they're working on that, and they finally got this rock moved out of the way, and in comes one of the head guard. And he walks right over to that door and just looks right at that rock that's now moved out of the way. And they all just thought, it's over before it started. But he turned around as if he'd never seen it, and walked right out. That was the first thing that one of them said when they got out there before we even got back to the base. Like that, God was so evidently working there. And so they were praying around the clock every half hour through the day. They handed the watch to someone else and they prayed for a half hour during the night. They each had hour prayer watches. And so Austin was going to be, and Austin had landed in Haiti the night before the kidnapping. Never been to Haiti before. He was going to be on duty at 1 o'clock. He was to wake the other ones up, and they were going to assess the situation. And From my understanding, the guards were still somewhat of a, you know, what about these guards that are, there's nine guards around here with guns, making sure that we don't escape. They got big guns. But they were certain that God was going to deal with them guards. They just had that feeling. And it starts to drizzle at 1 o'clock, and these guards all head up to the porch in the front. And they're all awake, making all kinds of commotion, and they move this post, and they, oh no, I'll back up quick. So it's deathly quiet, it's dark out, and one of the guards comes in, he goes, "Why isn't the generator running?" And Sam said, "That thing hasn't been running for days." He said, "Why isn't it running?" He said, "It's out of oil." So he heard a motorbike start up, take off, come back sometime later. They're working on this generator, and the generator fires up. And again, they're just like, this is the night. And so 1 o'clock, they get around, and they you know, pack up whatever little things they had. They wrap the baby up, and they get this door open, and single file, they go out, and they cross through these brambles and bushes to get. And it seems like as soon as they crossed this, they kind of gathered, and they knew they were free. They were still, what they didn't know, every time someone was released, Matt and then Kay's, they were driven out, and there's groups of gangsters all over the place. They had to, in their vehicle, they had to go through many checkpoints. This is in the middle of the night. And they had this whole zone covered, and they didn't know that. They were thinking, you know, once we get out of this immediate area, you know, we're free. And that seemed to be the case. So they were. There was a little bit of a cloudy night, but the moon was enough to give them some light to get through. And they followed some tree lines, and they hiked for 6 hours. And every once in a while, they would lose their way, and they'd look to the Big Dipper and to the North Star, and they would navigate somehow through that. And, several times they realized, you know what, we don't know where we're going. Let's stop and pray. And they would stop and huddle up and pray, and then somebody would have the direction to keep going. And so they hiked for 6 hours until 7:40. They found a man, and they had a little bit of money on him that someone had hid, and they paid him a little money to get minutes on his phone, and that's when he called at 7:40, called me. And it's just, the whole story is I don't know what it is. I don't know what it will do. I don't know what it does to you. I don't know what it does to me yet. But I have a feeling, and I've had it the whole time, that God planned this whole thing. Now maybe I did some things wrong. Sure I did. And maybe some other people did some things wrong, but God has something for us, right? In this. And I don't know what it is. It's hard for me to believe that it's time to pull out of Haiti. I'll just say that. It's hard for me to believe that God's vision was that we just close down things. Now I could be wrong. I've been wrong before on what God wanted for me in my life. But it encourages me to know that God can work despite our failures, and God can wait until we run out of resources. You know, and if we think about it, here in America, we have things set up to where, you know, we really don't need God. Now, we need God to die. We need God to go to heaven. We know that. But to live here in this world, we don't really need God. In fact, most Americans are doing very well without God. Now, I spent a few days in Miami last week, and I was amazed at the money that everybody has. So if we want to use God, we need to do that. We'll have the same options everybody else does. We'll have the same options as the Catholics do. We'll have the same options as the Protestants. We can choose the ways of this world, the minds, the brilliant minds of this world, to get us out of about every jam we find ourselves in. We can choose that. But don't we want to grab hold of what God wants? And maybe it's a little harder of a struggle. Maybe we come out a little scarred up. But our faith is strong, and our peace is there, and our families. The world is going, you know, we don't know much, but we do know that what you have is something. You know, 80% of Americans say they're Christians, but where are they at? Where are they? You would think 80% of America being Christians would be a mighty force to reckon with. Have we given in to that form of just going to the world's measures? And I just don't know, this thing has pushed me to the point where, I mean, God is so much bigger than our ways, so much bigger than our means. I mean, the FBI, the professionals, I mean, these men were, you know, I liked them. They were top of the line people, but they didn't have the answers. They didn't. And God proved that, I believe. Now, did God use some things here and there? I'm not saying yes or no to any of that, but so that's about all that I have to share, brother. I don't know if you wanted some questions or not, if we could just be done. Yeah. If anybody had, there's probably a lot of things that I should have said that I didn't say, and I'll think about all those things later. Yeah. Yeah. And the dogs. If you walk out at night, I used to go to prayer meeting there in Akai 3 times a week at 4 in the morning, and dogs would attack me. I'm telling you what, I had to fight these things off because nobody's moving. And dogs will find you. But yeah, they walk through villages, nobody around, no dogs. It was just amazing. Yeah, a miracle. Just, I mean, the miracles that happen pile up on top of each other. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they covered everything in prayer. What about this? Let's pray about it. Just amazing. And it's ironic because in there, they didn't have any options. You know, they couldn't have said, hey, let's get this, let's do that. Hey, you know, they only had prayer, and that's all that they needed. And that's encouraging to me because, you know, we can all trust in God and pray. Any other questions? Which people now? Yeah. Okay, so, yeah. So Scott Reese was the head of the U.S. Embassy security team. And we worked very close together through this whole thing. He actually said we've been tied at the hip for 2 months. But they wanted everybody out. They wanted everybody... You know, if you can picture them, you know, they don't care about the Haitian people. They don't care about the mission. Their job is to rescue the captives. And so their picture in their mind is helicopters and C-130s coming in, picking them up. And then, you know, if you notice on the news, it's really pushed the U.S. Coast Guard. You know, they really pumped that out. It looks good for America. But if they go back to Titan... you know, now what? You know, they're still in Haiti. I mean, maybe they get nabbed again. So they did not want that at all. But that's what we wanted. It was a little conflict we didn't talk about, but we just knew it was there. I wanted to respect them. They were working hard. They were going out of their way a lot. So I wanted to keep them involved. So I basically said, I agreed that I will call them when I'm going to pick them up. And they had my phones tapped and trapped and every other word. So they could have followed me anyhow. They had planes surveilling it. In fact, as soon as we got them back to the base, the planes were circling the cam. But they did seem to not know they escaped. It was definitely a shock when I called. But they wanted to come and join, and they have this the armored trucks and SWAT teams and all manner. And I just said, let me go pick them up. And then when I come back, you guys can do what you want to do. And I do somewhat regret that because they persuaded Cam to evacuate everybody. When the missionaries, they wanted to go back to their houses. They wanted to take a shower. They wanted to sleep in their beds that night. They had their stuff there. They had their hygiene stuff. They had their meds there. That was where they lived. They weren't two-week missionaries that were just flying in and out. But they portrayed Like when I was driving back, Scott called me and he said, hurry back to the base and we're all going to meet you there. I know something you don't know. And then when I got back to the base, he came up to me and opened my door and he said, they're coming to get you, or they're coming to get us, or coming to get them. And that's a tactic. Okay, they're coming to get us. Well, what are we going to do? You know, we need to leave. And the gang, Cats and Malzo, is coming to get them. And they're good at using things like that. You know, hey, Barry, we know that everybody wants to settle down for a day or two. But just imagine, you know, tonight in the middle of the night, this gang comes and rounds everybody back up and all that. And then they're telling that to Ohio. And Ohio's like, well, we can't afford that again. Just next thing you know, the command was given. We got to take them back to the airport and they're going to load up. And I'm not saying that wasn't how I wanted it to go. But I was, you know, maybe they want to stay. But I asked a couple of them, what do you want to do? And he said, we want to be home for Christmas. So I could have got a couple more weeks out of them. No, I wanted them to do what they wanted. I didn't want them to be like cattle run through this ringer where there's media and all that. I wanted to try to protect them. I was thinking of some people that I knew very personally that maybe wouldn't do well with all the hype and the FBI and helicopters and all of that. So yeah, they were there in force. I mean, there was a lot of... I'd kept all the guns off the compound until then. Yeah, they were crawling. Well, I'm not sure what you heard, and I'm not sure maybe you heard something that I didn't, and that was also one of their ploys to get us to pay. We're going to go in, and at least, if everything goes well, at least two of your people are going to die. We'll kill everybody. They knew we were non-resistant. They knew we weren't going to want that. Okay, so yeah, we don't want you to do that. Now, what do? Pay the ransom. Because the AKU commander said the FBI can't do one thing I don't allow them to do. And there was some conflict there. But no, the only way they could have went in and did that is if there was proof that life was either lost or going to be lost. It was the only way that they could have went in and did that. I think that's a key there. I don't know if people want that to be heard, but that's reality. Because if they go in there just on their own whim and do a tactical invasion and two Americans die, and then we hear on this text message, hey, they said they're all doing good, I mean, that's going to look real bad on them. So they have to have something to back their act up. But they knew that if they told some of these non-resistant people, we're going to go in and kill everybody, that may get them to change their mind on ransom. Now, I'm not saying that they couldn't have pulled strings and went in and did that, and, they're the government. They can pretty well do what they want, I think. No. Well, there's rumors that they're trying to find out if they're okay. I think that's interesting. I do plan to try to reach out to him. And I don't think we have much time either. They did say that man is going to take a bullet. And despite my pleadings, but I do feel like there's a future there, yeah. But I'm trying to make sure that everything's done. I don't want to get into anything and offend anybody or... But I still have his number, and yeah, I'd like to see if we can reach out there. But just them reaching out through our contact, wondering if everybody made it back okay, is a sign that there was some hearts changed, I think, in that group. Well, I hit standstill traffic, going to pick them up, and it was the last thing my nerves needed. But they said, we're going to be in the mountain, we'll see you coming, and then we'll meet you on the road. And so we navigated through that traffic, and they seen us, and they came down. And there happened to be this little police station there with these three policemen standing there. And I didn't really pay any attention to them. We had this great reunion, a lot of crying. It was just really something. Then I also know that, hey, we got to go. That's why I didn't bring Ray, because his family's there. I didn't want, I didn't want us to get carried away. Just we have to get these people back. Then that policeman comes out and he stops me. Hey, I need everybody to go into the police station and we need to talk. And I mean, what do you do? What do you do, Christians? I just said, I'm sorry, we have to go. I have to get them back. He said, nope, we have paperwork to fill out. I said, I'm sorry, but yeah, we got to go. And he kind of stepped in front of the truck, and I kind of just drove around him. And he pointed to this little car that ain't ran, looked like it hadn't ran in a couple decades. And told somebody to get in it, and I said, yeah, come, follow us. We can talk once we get back. And that truck, like, made a lurch forward, and that was the end of those fellas there. But then we hit that traffic coming back in, and it was I'd gotten the call that they know something. So I figured he was saying they're out looking, and that made sense to me. If their lives are on the line, then they're going to want to get them guys back. But I'm telling you, we had peace. They were singing. They were praising God. It was not, I mean, there was counselors on site, and the FBI has got these professionals. We're going to fly them in, and there's hospitals waiting. You know, we got padded rooms. We got the whole nine yards ready. And I'm saying, these people are going to be fine. And that's where we're praying, that God will lift them up. And they're talking, all of them talking at the same time. And it was amazing. Praising the Lord. And we got back to the base, and again, just I had a lot of Gatorade on stock, and everybody was just hugging and talking. It was just, there wasn't any, I mean, Wes was limping a little bit from the 10-mile hike, and he had some real bad sores on his foot. But yeah, I was like, so the FBI or the embassy pulls up. He's like, Bear, I'm going to bring the doctor with me and all this. And I said, bring whoever you want. So he comes in, okay, we're going to check everybody out. I asked him, I said, okay, the doctor's here, so if they can, they're like, no, we're fine, we don't. And the three-year-old boy did have some parasite, pretty major parasite infection that the FBI was watching. That's interesting. They made a note that they could tell his stomach was growing in a way that wasn't healthy. So that's interesting. Does that answer the question there? Then the SWATs came. Everybody's real respectful and. Sorry, you have something else. All right. Yeah, he was right there at that police station. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I asked Scott at the embassy, about that, who can we trust? And he started calling me brother. He said, brother, no one's going to mess with you guys. You can do whatever you want. He said, nobody in Haiti is going to mess with you guys. I think they seen the American presence more than anyone else. I mean, I didn't know if we could trust. I mean, you can trust most of them. I mean, in a sense like that, I think. But when money's involved, you lose your trust. Any other questions or comments or corrections? Maybe someone. All right. Well, I appreciate the opportunity and. can pray for us as we don't know what the future holds. Really taking one step at a time. And just thanks again for all your prayers and continued prayers. It's one of the first things I want to do in situations like that is reach out for prayer requests and then just feel more at ease and more at peace. So God bless you.